Stealing and robbing. Stealing is one of the 44 defilements. Other people may steal or loot what is not given by the owner. We will avoid doing so. Thus, you should practice Salaka Dhamma that helps to reduce defilements. So says Salaka Sutta. Buddhists who faithfully follow the Buddha's teaching observe the five precepts and avoid stealing. We will now explain the second precept in detail. The immoral act in question is adina dana, which literally means taking anything that is not given by the owner. This is, of course, stealing. And stealing includes taking a person's property surreptitiously or taking it by force. The Vinaya Pitaka spells out 25 kinds of stealing that are to be avoided by bhikkhus. It will take us far afield to dwell on them, and so we will describe mainly stealing and killing. Stealing is taking surreptitiously what belongs to another person without his knowledge, while he is asleep or off guard or absent elsewhere. To cheat a buyer by using false weights and measures. To fob off a worthless article on a buyer. To sell counterfeit gold and silver. Not to pay due wages or conveyance charges, or customs, or taxes, etc. To refuse to repay loans of money, or property, or what is entrusted to one's care, and to refuse to compensate for any damage or loss for which one is responsible. All these constitute acts of stealing. Robbery is using force to obtain other people's property. It includes intimidation and extortion of money or property, excessive and coercive taxation, unlawful confiscation of property for the settlement of debt, court litigation for illegal ownership through false witness and false statements. Stealing has five components. One, a certain thing or property is in the possession of a certain person. Two, recognition of its ownership by somebody. Three, the intent to steal or rob. 4. Commission of theft or robbery. 5. Successful removal of a certain thing or property, etc. An act will constitute theft, pure and simple, only when it involves all these ingredients. If the thing taken has no owner, it is not theft. Nor is it theft, even in the case of the property of somebody. If a person takes it, thinking that it has no owner, or that it belongs to him. But when a man knows that something he has taken belongs to another, he must return it or compensate for it. Otherwise he has committed theft. If, without any intention of stealing, a man takes another person's belonging, because of his intimacy with the owner, it is not theft. Otherwise, it is an act of stealing. But it must be returned to the owner if he wants it. Otherwise, it is an act of stealing. As for the fourth component, one is guilty of theft or robbery whether one commits the misdeed oneself or causes another person to commit it. Again, theft is committed as soon as one takes a thing and displaces it with intent to steal. He may drop it when detected by the owner, but that makes no difference. In the case of a bhikkhu, if the thing in question is worth 25 piyas, he ceases once and forever to be a member of the order of the Sangha. Putting the stolen property in its original place does not absolve one of guilt. So what matters most is the word etc. after displacement in the last condition, which points to cases of theft that do not involve displacement. You commit theft when you decide not to pay due fees, due wages, due fares, etc. Or when anyone who ought to receive money from you gives up all hope for it. If the court gives the decision in your favour in the case of property which you unfairly acquire through litigation, you commit theft. Therefore, an act is theft if it fulfills these five conditions, or if it involves taking another person's property surreptitiously, or through deception or intimidation. In the Salaika Sutta, the Buddha points out the four phases of the practice of non-stealing. First one makes the affirmation that one will avoid stealing, Salaika Vara. Secondly, one should cultivate thoughts, intentions, etc. about non-stealing, Chitupadavara. Then one should avoid the bad path of stealing by following the good path of non-stealing, Parikamanavara. This third phase of Salaika practice is based on avoidance or abstention. Abstention, Virati. There are three kinds of abstention: Sampatta Virati, Samadana Virati, and Samucheda Virati. Sampatta Virati is abstention from doing evil when occasion arises without any prior commitment to the observance of the moral precepts. And as an example, the commentary cites the case of one Chakana. In Ceylon, a man named Chakana went out to catch a rabbit because a physician had recommended the rabbit flesh as food for his sick mother. Seeing him, a rabbit ran away, but it got entangled with a creeper. Chakana caught the rabbit, and then he had second thoughts about killing it. He considered it improper to kill the animal for the sake of his mother. So he set it free, returned home, and declared solemnly, "To my knowledge, I have never killed a living being in my life. May my mother recover from her illness because of the truth of what I say." Then his mother instantly became well. Here in this story, Chakana had not undertaken to observe the precepts. So he caught the rabbit, intending to kill it. But as an afterthought, he released the animal. This abstinence from killing, or stealing, or lying, etc., when there is an opportunity or occasion for it, is termed Sampatta Virati. Samadana Virati is abstinence out of regard for one's commitment to morality. Here, the story of a lay Buddhist in a hilly region is a case in point. After vowing to observe the precepts in the presence of Buddha Rakita Thera, he ploughed the field. As the bullock, which he had unyoked after ploughing, did not come back, he went up a hill to look for it. There he was caught by a boa constrictor. He thought of cutting the reptile's head with his knife. But he remembered the vow which he had taken before his much revered bhikkhu, resolving to give up his life rather than break his vow. He threw away his knife and the boa instantly let him off and slipped away. This is a case of abstinence to honor one's commitment to morality. Samucheda Viriti refers to the abstinence involved in right speech, right action, and right livelihood of the Eightfold Noble Path. From the moment this kind of abstinence is established on the Aryan path, one has no desire to kill, steal, and lie. One has no conscience, one has no consciousness that is active enough to give rise to wrong speech, wrong action, and wrong livelihood. Such abstinence of the Aryan path helps one to do away with unwholesome tendencies once and forever. In the time of the Buddha, Kujutara, the slave girl, misappropriated 4 out of 8 kyats that she was supposed to spend on flowers for her mistress. One day she heard the Buddha's sermon and became a Sotapanna. From that time onwards, she spent all the money on the purchase of flowers, and on being questioned by her mistress, Queen Samavati, she did not lie, but made her confession. One who practices the Salaka Dhamma, as taught by the Buddha, will have to observe at least the 5 precepts. He must always abstain from killing, etc. If possible, he must devote himself to insight meditation in order to uproot all evils by means of samucheda, abstinence. Constant mindfulness of all phenomena arising from the 6 senses means abstinence from evils, and this needs some explanation. Unmindfulness may give rise to the desire to kill, to steal, etc. In connection with what one sees, hears, and so forth, if these desires are powerful, they may result in the actual commission of murder, theft, etc. As for the yogi who constantly watches everything that arises from the 6 senses, he is aware only of the consciousness and corporeality, their arising and passing away, neither pleasant nor unpleasant, still less something that will arouse in him the desire to kill, etc. Thus his abstinence from evil is assured. When this insight knowledge is well advanced, it leads to the knowledge on the level of the path, and then the yogi is wholly free from the desire to speak, act or earn his living wrongfully. These 3 kinds of abstinence mean diverting oneself from the path of stealing to that of non-stealing. Non-stealing for spiritual uplift. Evil deeds usually lead to a lower, ignoble life, whereas good deeds are the mainspring of higher, noble life. So the Buddha says that abstinence from stealing is conducive to our uplift. Unscrupulous men seize every opportunity to make themselves prosperous and achieve higher social status by stealing and robbing. We should, on the contrary, resolve to seek higher life by abstinence from stealing. The Buddha also teaches that non-stealing contributes to the extinction of defilements. This is the nibbanic phase, parinibbana-vara, of non-stealing. Buddhist laymen and women who observe the precept against stealing should remember that their observance is in accord with the Buddha's teaching in Salaka Sutta, and they should improve and perfect their practice as far as possible. The karmic effects of stealing and non-stealing, the Buddha's teaching about karmic effects of killing and non-killing in the Anguttara Nikaya is as follows. Monks, through repeated stealing and robbing, one is liable to land in hell, or in the animal world, or in the world of petas. At the very least, stealing leads to damage and loss of property. One who steals or robs suffers in hell and may be reborn as an animal. In a certain town of Burma, an elderly man received payment for a loan of 40 kyats, but he denied having received the money and demanded the settlement of debt. He swore, "May I be a buffalo in the borrower's house after death if I do not speak the truth." The borrower had to pay another 40 kyats, and on his death, the money lender did become a young buffalo in the house of his former debtor. This was borne out by the animal's responsiveness when the daughter of its owner called it by his usual name. The many people believed that the story is credible. So many people believed that the story is credible. The robber or the thief may also become a starving and miserable petter. If by virtue of good karma he is back in the human world, the wealth which he has amassed is highly vulnerable. On the other hand, the karmic effect of non-stealing is just the opposite. Rebirth in the deva world and on return to the human world, affluence that is indestructible and enduring. These are the karmic effects of stealing and non-stealing mentioned in the Pali Pitaka. The commentaries on Kudakapata and Itivutaka point out 11 karmic advantages of non-stealing: affluence, abundant wealth, an unlimited supply of consumer goods, fulfillment of every desire, increase of wealth, speedy acquisition of things desired, security of wealth, freedom from the five enemies that constitute a threat to the security of wealth, undisputed possession of property, that is, possession with no one to contest it, high rank and leadership, and peace and happiness. Here the five enemies that endanger the security of property are kings or rulers, thieves, water flooding, fire, and one's hated offspring. When we say that the king is one of the enemies posing a threat to our economic security, we mean unscrupulous kings. Usually law-abiding kings help to promote the economic welfare of the people. Those who avoid stealing will not in their future lives suffer from the loss of property through the action of bad kings, thieves, fire and water, nor will they have to bequeath their wealth to unworthy sons and daughters. The karmic consequences of stealing are, of course, just the opposite of those of non-stealing. These may be summed up as poverty, hunger and misery in spite of hard work, economic ruin, destruction of property by five enemies, low social status and hardship, and privation in daily life. Practice for higher life. So everyone should avoid stealing for his or her uplift in status and prosperity. For the same reason, one should seek to eliminate the other 43 evils, such as killing, aggression, etc., that are mentioned in the Salaika Sutta. Moral evils are to be eliminated through commitment to moral precepts, as well as through meditation. For the conquest of non-moral evils, the yogi can resort to wise reflection, meditation, and knowledge on the Aryan path level, Arya Magajnana. Of the 44 evils, some can be wholly done away with on the Sotapatti level, some at Anagami stage, while some can be stamped out only on the attainment of arahatship. Extinction of defilements. At this meditation center, the yogis practice constant mindfulness to overcome defilements. Defilements arise from lack of mindfulness, and even if they do not arise at the moment of seeing, etc., they may find an outlet in retrospections. Such defilements are called anusaya kilesa, that is, kilesa lying dormant in us. With the development of concentration, the ever-watchful yogi becomes aware of only corporeality and consciousness in perpetual flux. He has an insight into their impermanence, unsatisfactoriness and conditionality, anicca, dukkha and anatta, and this insight leaves no room for greed, ill will and ignorance. So unwholesome desires, such as the desire to kill, etc., become extinct. The yogi overcomes them whenever he is mindful of them. This is overcoming by the opposite, tadanga pahana. When the insight knowledge matures, the yogi attains the path of Aryas. At the Sotapatti stage, the ego belief, wrong belief, doubt, and all evil desires leading to the lower worlds become extinct. Later on at the Sakadagami stage, the yogi is assured of the complete extinction of gross evils associated with sensuous desire and ill will. At the Anagami stage, he is wholly free from the subtle forms of the same unwholesome propensities, while finally, with the attainment of arahatship, he is liberated from all evils rooted in the craving for existence, pride and ignorance. To achieve this liberation, the yogi must be constantly mindful in accordance with the teachings of Salaika Sutta. Some may ask what this sutta has to do with mindfulness. They need not ask this question if they understand the sutta. Every moment of mindfulness means the practice of Salaika Dhamma at its highest level. The yogi will vow to avoid all misdeeds through constant mindfulness, although unmindful persons kill, steal, etc., in the wake of what they see, hear, etc. Lack of mindfulness means harboring potentials for misdeeds and the choice of wrong path, leading to killing, stealing, and so forth. Every moment of mindfulness marks a step in spiritual development. Initially, the yogi is a foolish worldling, ignorant of the arising and passing away of all psychophysical phenomena. Mindfulness develops concentration, unusual insight, and awareness of the corporeality as the known object and consciousness as this knowing subject. This is the first step. The second step is the awareness of cause and effect as the only two aspects of reality. Then there is the clear realization of anicca, dukkha, and anatta, and so on with other successive stages of illumination. This is what the yogis themselves reveal to us. Among them are both men and women who have had a specially clear insight into the nature of phenomenal existence. This morning, a Dulabha Bhikkhu, i.e. a man who has joined the Sangha on a temporary basis, told us how he adored the Buddha because of his deeper understanding of the Dharma. Before one practices the Dharma, one's knowledge of the Dharma is limited and based only on tradition. Then instructions of the teachers fail to make impression and arouse interest. It is practice that enlightens the mind, makes the yogi aware of the nature of reality. Some do not know what to make of the experience of the yogis that I describe to them. They say that they do not remember what I tell them, so they do not speak well of my discourse. Of course, I might have failed to preach something that could be well understood by them. But the yogis who have practiced meditation appreciate my teaching. Other teachings fail to satisfy them fully. To them, elaborate sermons with scriptural quotations, examples, and analogies are not worthwhile if divorced from practice. To talk about the nature of mind-body complex or impermanence in terms of Pali texts requires detailed explanations with examples. But as for the meditating yogi, the distinction between nama and rupa, or the passing away of all phenomena, is borne upon him at every moment of his mindfulness. So these yogis appreciate our teaching and evaluate it on the basis of their experience. This is indeed a step in their spiritual development. Through the practice of meditation, the yogis realize anicca, dukkha, anatta and attain various stages of insight knowledge. Of these, that of Udayapayana is striking. At this stage, the perception is quick. The intellect is sharp. It seems as if there were nothing that could not be perceived or known. The yogi experiences illumination and intense rapture. The mind is very clear and happy. The joyful feeling is indescribable, and the Buddha labels it Amanusirati, a joy that is beyond the reach of ordinary men. But it is necessary to note these delightful stages of consciousness and reject them so as to attain Bhangajnana. At that stage, the known object, as well as the knowing consciousness, vanishes. The vision of human form, with its hands, head, etc., is nowhere to be found. Everything is passing away, and a deeper insight into anicca, dukkha, and anatta dawns on the yogi. This is followed by successive stages of insight knowledge, bhayajnana, adina va jnana, etc., which we touched upon in a previous discourse. Later on, we come to sankharupeka jnana, a very subtle, fine insight knowledge that lasts for 2 or 3 hours and is characterized by automatic, effortless cognition and equanimity. This stage leads to anuloma jnana, and then finally to arya magga phala jnana, and that is knowledge of the path and fruition on the plane of sotapanna. If the yogi keeps on practicing mindfulness, he passes through the other two stages of Aryas, and at last he attains arahatship, the supreme goal of the holy path. Progress on the path presupposes constant mindfulness, and so one should practice mindfulness for spiritual uplift and conquest of all defilements.